Dr. Sean Galtz, has taken a manuscript that was written by Tzvi Alpaleg, who was an academic, author, and a senior researcher at the Dayan Institute at Tel Aviv University. In the mid-1950s, Alpaleg was the military governor of the Triangle, a concentration of Israeli Arab towns and villages adjacent to the Green Line, located in the eastern Sharon Plain among the Sumerian foothills. And from 1956 to 57, he was the military governor of Gaza. Alpaleg became Israel's first military governor of the West Bank in 1967. He would repeat the role during the Israeli occupation of the Fayyid region, the district around the city of Ismailia in Egypt, in 1973. And again he served as military governor in occupied South Lebanon in 1982. He was Israel's ambassador to Turkey from 1995 to 1997. So I'd like to welcome Sean Galtz to the Israel Connection. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm really privileged to be in the show and talk about this fascinating book.
Yes, that's what we're talking about today, a book titled From Victory to Disaster, The 6 Days War and the Massacre at the Nova Festival. When I first found out about this book, totally by accident, when I was browsing on internet and making some remarks on a post, I discovered that the book was written by Tzvi Alpaleg, who died in 2015. So can you please explain the evolution of this book for us, please, Sean?
Tzvi is a relative of mine. He's the uncle of my wife. And I met Tzvi around 2007. And that was a few years before I left Israel to do my PhD in Toronto, Canada. And beyond the family relationships and the fact that Tzvi was a fascinating person, very generous and kind and very smart, one of the things we talked about is his manuscript. So at that time, after his long life service in the Israeli army, being an ambassador, basically saying the same thing all over again, and that's the gist of the book, he was looking for an editor to edit the book and publish it finally. And we had some discussions around it. It didn't came to work. And then I left Israel. I know he tried a few other editors. And eventually, Tzvi passed away in 2015, and the manuscript was not published, and it was in Hebrew. Then fast forward to 2023, when I always knew this book needs to be published, that it's a very important book, and it needs to be published. Then in 2023, October 7, when the events happened in Israel, I realized I need to publish this book because in a way for me, the events of October 7 was some kind of a prophecy that is written in the book, even though the book was finalized somewhere in 2015, so about 8 years earlier. Turns out that the widow of Tzvi, Michal Snonit, very known Israeli poet and author, she gave it to the Dayan Center in Tel Aviv, and they just didn't do anything with it. It was just lying, collecting dust on their shelves in the archive. I managed to talk to Michal. We asked the Dayan Center to bring back the manuscript. I've edited it and translated it for about 3 months, which was on one hand, it was a fascinating process because it was just like talking to Tzvi while he's already dead. I also wanted to make it in English because I felt that it will gain more audience this way. It will be more accessible to more people. But also because Tzvi was saying those same things again and again during his tenure, during his career, and no one in Israel really listened to him, I thought it better to publish it in English. I'm not saying it will not be published in Hebrew as well. I've edited it very heavily. I've translated it into English. That's the kind of a frame story around the book.
Yes. Yeah, so what you wrote in addition to what Tzvi Alpaleg had written was about October the 7th and also kind of a foreword about explaining the book, yes? At the start
Correct.
Of the book.
Yes. Yeah, so everything in the book, apart from the biographies of the people that are involved in the last chapter around October 7, were all written by Tzvi apart from a short introduction that I've added at the beginning, I didn't want to burden the reader with too much information that is not what Zvi has written. I wanted to give Zvi's perspective and Zvi's argument the central piece in this book. I thought it would be helpful to add the biographies of the people involved for readers that are interested in more background around the story, because, you know, as one reader wrote to me, this is like an autopsy from the inside that spans decades. If someone wants more background, they can read the biographies of those people. I also added the piece around October 7. It is important to mention that Zvi's original name for the book was From Victory to Disaster. So it's the same name. I'm the one that added From the 6 Days War, which was the original intention, to the massacre at the Nova Festival, because for me, that was the highlight of this disaster, how Moshe Dayan and others in the Israeli government throughout the years have managed to take such a glorious victory in the 6 Days War and turn it into this amazing farce that is mentioned in the book and ending up with this terrible massacre. It's important to maybe summarize Zvi's argument throughout the book very shortly to say that Israel, and especially led by Moshe Dayan after the 6 Days War, were both arrogant and ignorant. So they were arrogant in the sense that they thought they would bring democracy to the Palestinians in the occupied territory. And they were ignorant because they didn't understand the nature and the culture of Arabic people. And you know, it's interesting, one of the pieces I didn't manage to squeeze into the book is a citation of the late wife of Moshe Dayan. And she was saying that Moshe Dayan didn't really know how to speak good Arabic. She told him, your Arabic is good enough to talk to the peasants, but now you need to talk to the nobility. You need to talk to those Palestinians. And he just didn't have the Arabic to speak about it. But this is very symbolic in the sense that he did not understand their culture. When Moshe Dayan pushed towards election, democratic elections in the occupied territory, he didn't understand that it will be leveraged by the PLO to take control over the occupied territories. And for me, you know, even though a lot of things, a lot of water has fled through the Jordan River since 1967 and until 2023, it's all about the beginning. How you manage your control over those people. And Israel had its own experience in the triangle with the Arab Israelis, where Israel managed everything and they were very loyal citizens. Eventually, there was no shooting, there was no violence. Whereas in the occupied territory, in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank after the 6 Days War, when Israel was all about, we will be kind and generous with you and we'll bring you democracy and we'll enlighten you and you will be generous towards us and kind toward us. This just blew in the face of everyone eventually. And that's what Zvi was basically saying all across those maybe 40 years, but no one listened.
Clarify, please, for the listeners, when you refer to the triangle and the area that Zvi had responsibilities for, what was that area exactly and what role did he have?
Before 1967, for 19 years, Israel was basically occupying the Israeli Arabs in the area of Taibe and I think it's Jeljulia. And so it's somewhere in the north of Israel, as well as the Bedouins and the other Arab Israelis that were in the territory of Israel. Now, Zvi was one of the governors of the Triangle area, which is considered Arab Israelis. Eventually, they became citizens. And my understanding, and this is not written in the book, but Zvi is basically saying, if we would have treated the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank the same way that we treated the Arab Israelis, meaning we control everything and eventually you become Israeli citizens. All this may not have happened, but the approach was very different. Moshe Dayan said, and this is cited in the book, a Palestinian person should be born, married, raise their kids, do all those things without seeing one time one Israeli soldier or one Israeli official. And Tzvi is saying, this is not the Palestinian culture. This is not the Palestinian, the way the Palestinians and the Muslims in general see occupiers. If they're not dependent on the occupier, they will try to kill the occupier. And that's what eventually happened. It's funny to see in 67 or a bit later when Moshe Dayan is saying, we don't need the soldiers to be on the ground. It's enough for us to have the airplanes on the hill and so on and so forth. And that blew into our face in October 7 when all the electronic surveillance devices and everything just became ridiculous in the face of thousands of bloodthirsty Hamas terrorists that just stormed all those obstacles and killed and raped and murdered and you name it. One of the things that is interesting in this book is to see this chronology that started in 67 and just went on and on and escalated. And people may say, well, after 10, 20 years of Israeli occupation after the Six Days War, Israel was not so kind with the Palestinians. But the point is that Israel then didn't have a choice because after they initiated democratic elections, which the PLO in the second round was taking all the important seats instead of the local leaders that Israel should have cooperated with, after Israel opened universities in the occupied territories, and those became some kind of greenhouse for terror and so on. After doing all those mistakes, every mistake in the book, obviously that was then too late. So eventually we know that Israel left the Gaza Strip and now it's back in the Gaza Strip and so on and so forth. I'm not saying that the book is covering 60 years of occupation and dealing between Israelis and Palestinians. But what I am saying is that Tzvi's hypothesis is very interesting in the sense that we as a democratic people living in a democracy, Western people, we would like to think that every person will cherish democracy, will cherish this approach and so on and so forth. But what Tzvi is saying, and I want to emphasize that this is what Tzvi is saying, he's saying, this is not the Muslim culture. This is not the Muslim perception. As Napoleon has found out hundreds of years before, if you do not treat them in a way that they're dependent on you, they will eventually they will try to kill you. That's what we're seeing. You know, you can I've received a lot of criticism, and obviously this criticism is not targeted to me because I'm merely the editor, about the fact that how can you say such things about Muslims? How can you say such things about Arabs? This is racial, this is racist, this is that. I even had a Jewish literary agent from New York telling me that it's just like this orphan that goes into the court and says that he needs to get mercy because he killed his parents, he murdered his parents, and now he's an orphan. So this literary Jewish agent said that this is the same argument that is being progressed in the book, which I find to be ridiculous. I mean, Tzvi had all the experience and the knowledge. He was speaking fluent Arabic. He was the first governor of the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. He knew them by heart. And he's saying this is not their culture. He's talking about this Muslim belief that it's allowed to hide your belief, your Muslim belief, if you're facing an occupier, if you're facing a foreigner. And that's exactly what they've done. There is this Muslim saying that the hand you wish to cripple, you kiss it and you pray it will be crippled. And that's basically what the Palestinians have been doing for decades in the occupied territories until it all bursted in the face of Israel. For me, whomever didn't listen in the past to Tzvi's approach, now I don't think you have any choice. I mean, it's in our face. It's just like, it's so obvious that it was the wrong approach that was led by Moshe Dayan. And that is what the book is about. The book is talking from Tzvi's perspective on the first 10, 15 years after the Six Days War, and how we, the Israelis, have treated everything wrongly.
It's interesting how the book, as you say, the time period that it covers, it stops kind of suddenly with the issues concerning the establishment of a university in the territories, the Birzeit University, which exists today. Do you have any idea why Tzvi kind of stopped there and didn't continue?
I think that there's a few reasons. One reason is that I think that he basically concluded his argument. He was talking about the first decade, more or less, after the Six-Day War. And my understanding from him, both from our conversation at the time and from the book, is that he believes that this first decade was the formative decade. That formed the relationship between the Israelis and the occupied Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. After that, it was a continuous process that started there. But my understanding from him was that this is what formed the discourse. This is what formed the relationship between the Israelis and the Palestinians. That's one reason. I think the second reason is that that's the time when Tzvi was actually active in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. He later became the ambassador, the Israeli ambassador to Turkey. So even though he was involved and very much being a researcher of those issues, he personally was less involved. And it should be mentioned in this respect that he was a very acclaimed researcher of the Palestinian history. He wrote two books about the Great Mufti, the Grand Mufti, which was the first Palestinian leader in Jerusalem. Those are considered the standard around the Grand Mufti, which basically started this process of the Palestinian national recognition and so on.
Now, a central part of the book, at the very heart of the book, is Dayan's misunderstanding, arrogance, and ignorance, as you've already alluded to. So clearly, Tzvi Elpeleg was in strong disagreement with Moshe Dayan's policies of appeasement with the Arab population in the occupied territories post-67. He must have been in dispute to some degree with Moshe Dayan. Was there any direct interaction between him and Dayan, as you're aware?
I'm not aware of, and I think there was a gap. So when Dayan, when in the 67, when the war started and ended, Tzvi was a colonel and Dayan was much higher in the political ladder. So I think there was no direct discussion between the two. But I can tell you that I've had conversations with people that either have been part of the Dayan Center as researchers. One of them was the Israeli ambassador to the United States at one stage. So we're talking people that are very heavily connected to the Israeli politics and so on. And they were very dismissive of this approach as well. So they were saying, yes, the Americans pushed the Israelis to hold the elections and this and that. So what I felt was that they're dismissing this approach altogether, stating that the trying to bring democracy to the Palestinians was probably Israel's worst mistake since 67.
But when you say that Israel should have treated the Arab Palestinians in the territories in the same way as those in the triangle pre-67, you seem to be suggesting that Israel should have gone for not for a two-state solution, should have tried to bring all the Arab population together under Israeli control. Now, what would Svea have said about the demographic issues here, where we would have seen such a large Arab population existing within Israel?
So that's a good question. So Zvi is not referring directly to this point. What he is saying is that when Israel started its kind of occupation of the Israeli Arabs in the Triangle and so on, there was no intention of making those people Israeli citizens. In fact, the government at the time was saying, let's control them, let's see how things unfold. But one of the things that Zvi alludes to, and this actually is not part of the book because I felt it's a bit beyond the scope of the book, he talks a lot about those Arab Israelis. And in fact, he's saying that one of the things that incited those Arab Israelis against Israel is the Palestinians. So among the things that he's counting as negative in the way Israel dealt with the Palestinians in the occupied territories is the fact that terror then started to seep into the Israeli Arabs that before then were very loyal to the Israeli government. And in a way, that's also one of the ways that Zvi is trying to illustrate his approach with respect to Muslims, where he talks about those Arab Israelis and how they adopted very quickly the Israeli culture and just wanted to become part of it. So they will never stop being Muslims, they will never stop being Arabs, but according to their culture, if they can be part of the occupier, if they can enjoy the budgets, if they can serve in the army, if, as we're seeing today, actually, maybe not with the Arab Israelis, but with the Bedouins and the Druze and so on, then they will do so. So Zvi was basically saying, and a lot of those parts on the Arab Israelis did not make it into the book because I felt it will widen the scope too much. But he was basically saying Israel had its own experience with the Arab Israelis that was very successful. Why didn't we apply the same approach to the Palestinians? Why did Dayan decide to be so enlightened and democratic and so on, whereas we had our own experience, the Israeli had their own experience with the Arab Israelis that worked wonderful. They were dependent on us. They've done anything they can to identify with us. They were holding, so Zvi's talking about ceremonies to the Israel Independence Day, where those Arab Israelis were wearing white and flagging, waving the flags of Israel and so on and so forth. And Zvi is saying, why didn't we follow that? Why did we try this? Why did we do this experiment that eventually exploded in our face? We could have gotten the same results. And obviously, the demographic aspect is relevant. That's one of the things he's talking about, the fact that, when the borders were opened after 67, that's where the movement started, and the movement was mainly from the occupied territories into Israel rather than the other way around.
I want to delve into one particular character that's in the book. I'm referring to Hamdi Kanaan, who was the mayor of Nablus. As we're talking, the book discusses the elections that Israel introduced, thanks to Dayan's initiative, which brought about the serious situation where the PLO rose to prominence. Now, Hamdi Kanaan was the mayor of Nablus, but lost his position, but was seeking involvement or assistance from Israel to get back into the role that he had previously had. And although Israel had said that it wasn't wanting to particularly cooperate with anybody who was in the territories, they made an arrangement with Kanaan that seemed to go against what their policy was. So what happened here with Kanaan? He really didn't get much success, even though he was supported by Israel in his efforts to become the mayor again of Nablus.
I think if there's anything in the book that highlights in the best way the irony and the paradoxical aspect of this entire thing is the two rounds of elections. It's not by chance that the chapter name is forced elections. How can or force democracy? How can you force elections? How can you force democracy? This is not democracy to begin with. And I think this shows the gap between, on one hand, Dayan's approach and his ignorance and arrogance, and at the same time, the reaction that came from the Palestinians. So Hamdi Knan is certainly a very good example to this approach, in the sense that Dayan's perspective was, if there are Arab leaders that are interested in collaborating with us, with the Israelis, then they're Queenslands, meaning they're traitors and we should not deal with them. And in fact, it should have been the other way around. So the first round of election was a big embarrassment, misunderstanding. Everyone was suspecting everyone. And then the second one, the PLO just realized that someone in the Israeli government is not really thinking through, and they just took most of the seats in the municipal government across the occupied territory. So in a way, if you will, Israel just handed over on a silver plate the control in the occupied territories to leaders that were either appointed by the PLO or were affiliated with the PLO. I'm not even getting into the story of those that have been assassinated by the PLO because they decided to run for the position, but they were not supported by the PLO, or they were interfering with people that were appointed by the PLO. The absurdity is that Israel is the one that actually created this situation. And then, as it states in the book, even the Americans, after the PLO leaders have been elected in a democratic election, then even the US is saying, why are you not willing to talk to them? They were actually elected. So, you know, it's like, go prove that you don't have a sister. If one stupid person throw a rock into a well, not even 10 wise people will take it out. And I think that's a very good illustration of the situation where Israel is now. I'm not saying it's the only mistake that Israel did during those 60, 70, almost 70 years, but it's certainly where it started. And I think that's one of the important part of, or the important aspects of this book, is that it shed lights on where it all started and why it started. And I think if you want to resolve something or you want to understand something, you need to start where, you need to look where it started and why it started and how did it start. And then you can maybe learn some lessons going forward.
Yeah, this fellow Hamdi Kanan wanted to cooperate with Israel, but he ended up being treated as a collaborator with Israel by the PLO, and they basically put out death threats on him and anybody else that they saw that was they thought was working together with Israel. In the book, there are some photographs of Tzvi Elpeleg. Unfortunately, they don't really have any details as to when they were taken and who are in the photos together with Tzvi. How did you procure these photographs, and why are they not annotated better than they are?
Okay, so there's three types of pictures in the book. There is the cover picture, which is depicting Ruth and her father murdered at the Nova Trans Festival. As can be seen in the picture, Ruth was a disabled person and her father used to take her to those parties, and they were murdered by the Hamas during the Nova Festival. Then there is the picture of Noor Arghamani that, thanks God, have been released from the Hamas captivity recently, and that's in the seventh, in the last chapter around October 7th. The rest of the pictures, apart from the portraits of the biographies that are attached to the biographies at the last part of the book, pictures that were Tzvi is appearing in are taken from his private collection. I tried to find out the time and the people that are in the pictures and the time that this picture were taken, but I was not successful in doing that. I can say that the pictures were taken during Tzvi's military career, which was from around 56 to around the 70s. So between these 15 years, and they're mainly taken either in the Triangle or in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank.
Okay. One other thing that I find a bit of an oddity in the book is the epilogue. It's written with rather, I find, unfortunate language, with not the level of scholarship which I find in the rest of the manuscript. Do you have any thoughts about the epilogue? I mean, to refer to Israel as being one of the crappiest colonial regimes that he can think of is unfortunate language, I feel, to be using. Not very erudite language.
Yeah, this is a citation from, I think he was a journalist in Israel, and he kind of summarized the situation. I felt there should be a prologue in this book, and I was thinking what should be the prologue, and I was thinking...
At this point, Sean Galt says that he sought a prologue for the book, but he meant an epilogue rather than a prologue.
What will encapsulate everything in a very short text?
Give us a succinct summary of what is the essence of the book. That's what you're talking about.
Yes. And I felt that this thing was kind of a good summary of the point that the book is trying to make.
So this is your edition at the end of the day.
It's taken. So all the text in the book, apart from the biographies and the chapter on October 7, are from the original manuscript that Zvi wrote in Hebrew, including this citation.
Including this citation. Yeah, yes. Well, anyway.
My name is not on the book. I felt that it would be perhaps better not to mention my name, because sometimes people make this connection and they say, this is what you think, this is what you say. But in fact, I wanted the stage to be clear for Zvi and his argument and his, I mean, after all, I think he was working on this book on and off for over 30 or 40 years. You don't necessarily see it in the book because there's a lot of things that have been taken out and so on. But he's been doing a very thorough research work around this. He was looking into newspapers that were published in Arabic, into articles that were published in Hebrew. He himself wrote more than 40 articles that were published in different venues in Israel around this topic, basically saying the same thing. This is the wrong approach. This approach is not suitable for Muslims and Palestinians. They will provide a different interpretation than we are. They don't think like us. Part of the criticism I've heard is that it's racist to say that there are people that democracy perhaps is not the best way to treat them. But I don't think it's racism. I think Zvi firmly believed that this will not work with the Palestinians, and I think he was right.
So when you say that you haven't wanted to claim any credit, it does leave the question open to a reader as to who actually authored then the last chapter of the book about October the 7th. Don't you really have to answer or provide the...
But the thing is, you know, person? David, it's mentioned in the copyright page at the cover that both the biographies and the chapter on October 7 are built on common knowledge and basically has borrowed a lot from Wikipedia. So I don't think this is an issue because it's kind of common knowledge. There's nothing new in the chapter around the events of October 7 that is not available in many other sources. It's just that I felt that it's important to bring the story. And, you know, interestingly enough, I think we're all kind of post-trauma after what happened in October 7. I can tell you that I didn't have the courage to read about what happened October 7 until I needed to write this chapter for the book. And then I relied on Wikipedia and other sources, and Wikipedia in Hebrew, and translated it into English and so on. But it is a trauma. And it was now we're, what, almost a year after it happened, and it's still touching on such painful events. I really hope that the people that will read this book will get some type of understanding of what happened, why did it happen, and how did we get to this point. I got great feedback from readers, one of them saying, if you read only one book about the Middle East, this should be the book you're reading. And I think one thing is for sure is that the person who wrote this book, the late Zvi Alperg, was certainly either the most expert on the field, or at least one of the few global leading experts on this field. So I think it's very important to read what he had to say about the way Israel managed the occupied territories from 1967 after the victory in the Six Days War, all the way until now, our days and the consequences we're seeing.
Yeah, I think we've got a book that's unconventional here in terms of its treatment of what has happened in the Israeli-Palestinian dispute. It gets an essence of what is at the core of the dispute, which is not really made very evident in a lot of the history we read about this ongoing dispute or conflict as we know it, the Israeli-Palestinian dispute. So I think you've brought to light a book that's of great interest, and I think I certainly commend it to my listeners to take a look at. You've been listening to an interview with Dr. Sean Goltz, who is a senior lecturer at the School of Business and Law, Edith Cowan University in Perth, West Australia. He has been instrumental in producing a book based on a manuscript that was left behind by Zvi Alperg in 2015, who had had a long career serving the Israeli government. May I add that I was only advised yesterday that the book that I have been discussing with Sean was available on Amazon, but Sean has just been approached by another publisher, so for the time being the book is unavailable, and I will let you know once it becomes available again for purchase.